third time.
So, Mr. Greenberg, I just wanted to open it up a little bit, and given your role as the head of one of the most powerful companies in the United States and in the world.
Was.
To while you were there, and based on that experience, what you've seen following your departure, if you could just give us a little bit of guidance and a little bit of your sort of institutional knowledge on how the markets got where they got, how the economy got where it got, and how we ended up with the crisis that this commission is studying.
Well, I think the in a way, the debate going on in the Senate and the Dodd bill is hitting on many of those issues. But clearly, you know, the desire of the U.S. government in a number of administrations to increase housing and have more people own homes was a laudable policy. The problem is it got out of hand. People got into homes that didn't have the means to be in a home. At the same time, while that was going on, the rating agencies didn't do anybody a favor in how they rated the different asset classes. I'm not sure they even investigated some of the things that some of the investment bankers were putting in front of them. And then the accounting profession didn't help by having mark-to-market come out at the wrong time. Mark-to-market was a disaster at that time. It made no sense, whatever. There was nobody was calling the overall shots. Every agency was doing its own thing. And you had the investment banks leveraging their capital beyond anything that was ever reasonable. The SEC didn't say boo about it. You know, there was a series of things. There's enough blame to go around to almost everybody, and then many firms did some foolish things, obviously. Some firms foresaw that the housing market was going to bust because they were involved at the initial part where people were buying homes who shouldn't be in a home. And they had a sense that this market was going to collapse, and they took advantage of it. They created products that in their heart they knew wasn't going to survive, and they sold them around the world. They hedged out their own exposure. And so, you know, there's a lot of that went on, obviously. And there was nobody in charge of the whole thing. And so it went to different pockets, and it blew up, obviously, it was going to happen. And then, you know, when it did blow, I mean, we reacted very selectively. You know, Lehman was let go. Bear Stearns was sold. The next in line, by all, if you believe what you read, was going to, you know, Merrill Lynch was sold, was going to be Morgan Stanley, then Goldman Sachs. And so they headed that off. In my sense, this is me saying this, AIG was used as a backdoor bailout.
What about the role of the derivatives contracts that the financial products unit was engaged in dealing?
Well, yeah, there's no question about it. When AIG lost its AAA rating, as I said earlier, they should have stopped then and hedged.
So in your opinion, the AAA rating is really the key turning point for the derivatives business,
Yeah, the credit derivatives. They should have stopped. If not stopped, they should have hedged out what they had and be very selective going forward.
Is there anything else about the derivatives world that we should be looking at? I mean, like lack of transparency.
Yes, you need an exchange. It's got to be traded on an exchange.
Do you think it's possible to trade all the
yes.
types of contracts?
Yes, and if you can't trade the contract, don't do it.
What about, you mentioned mark-to-market accounting.
Yeah.
What percentage weight would you give the mark-to-market accounting rules?
It played a big role in the asset base. When you mark down your whole asset base, it obviously shrunk your capital at a time it shouldn't have been shrunk. It recovered in a couple of years. And, you know, so why go through that pain at that time? Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that it came out at the wrong time. Does that mean that if it had come out earlier, I mean, is it the timing issue or is it the mark-to-market?
I think the mark-to-market should have been far more time to debate what it should apply to mm-hmm. and what it shouldn't apply to. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was very unfortunate that they did what they did when they did it. Now, since then, mm-hmm. they did pass some laws in Congress to ameliorate that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a little late.
Right.
And I mean, we took careful aim and shot ourselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm. Did you think that the rescue of Bear Stearns had any role in exacerbating or mitigating the crisis?
I think that there's one, you know, it happened one after the other,
mm-hmm.
and each step destroyed more and more confidence. And I think when Lehman went down, my judgment, when two banks were given bank holding company licenses, so they had access to the window, and Lehman was not.
Mm-hmm.
Speaks for itself.
So, again, to clarify, are you saying that the rescue of Bear and the bankruptcy of Lehman both eroded confidence?
I think the Bear Stearns thing was a surprise. It wasn't as earth shattering,
mm-hmm.
but Lehman was.
Right.
Do you think people expected after Bear that the government would also bail out Lehman?
Probably.
Do you think people expected because of the Bear assistance that the government would then step in and do something about Lehman after all?
Yeah, I think that, you know, this was going on, the Lehman thing, for some time, is my understanding. They tried to get a Korean buyer and then a Japanese or British buyer. I think it was Barclays. They were, mm-hmm. and that didn't materialize. You know, I think then to let Lehman go down, a very old, prestigious firm, I think shattered an awful lot of confidence. Especially when the bank holding company licenses were given to two other institutions in a matter of a few days. It was very strange.
You've been in the business for a long, long time. Did you see?
It doesn't seem that way, but yes.
No, I've been practicing law for a long, long time. It doesn't seem that way either, but it, you know, except when I have to get up in the morning. Did you see a change in compensation structures dramatically? I mean, I saw it in the legal community over the years I've been practicing, and I don't know if you noticed that or if you were ever concerned about the changing compensation structures in the financial service industry and whether indeed, because of the enormous upside that was available, that caused people to take risks that they might not have had compensation been less incentivized.
I think there's no question in my mind that that compensation was not tied to the right things. It was too short-ended. We had the perfect structure in AIG, which was tied to shareholder benefits. For example, nobody in AIG had a contract, starting with me. I refused it. I would not take more than $1 million in salary because there was no tax deductions for anything more.
Mm-hmm.
Any bonus was tied to performance. Most of my compensation came out of stock options, which were long dated. But we had a private company, which was the genesis of AIG to begin with, Star International, when we created AIG, and got AIG shares for the assets that we had sold. And we used that, those shares, as a compensation, one part of it. Did many things with it, the private company, but one part was through every 2 years we the shareholders of Star International would agree to have a share allocation for certain executives in AIG that performed very well. They couldn't get those shares until they retired. It was a perfect tie-in. A, you kept good people, number one. Because they left, they gave up what they been set aside. But I do believe that short-dated compensation plans is not in anybody's interest. It leads to bad practices.
And by short-dated, I mean what sort of time?
Well, I think anything that, you know, on an annual basis or, mm-hmm. you know, a couple of years, you know, I don't think it's right.
And at other firms, did you see any changes in compensation practices over your career? I mean, I imagine you're competing for talent, so you have some idea.
Yeah, but, you know, we had a structure that mm-hmm. no one could compete with. I wish they could, but they couldn't.
Right. So you weren't paying any attention to what...
No.
Okay.
We didn't lose good people, because mm-hmm. they would give up an awful lot if they left.
Right.
What about the compensation with the financial products unit?
Well, as I said, half their profits stayed in the company and was at risk.
But 30% is, I mean, would that be considered high by sort of...
But it was a joint venture, essentially. You know, they brought skills that we didn't have. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't very much capital required in the business.
Now, when Tosin left, I imagine you had the opportunity to change the nature of the venture.
We did.
But you still kept the 30% profit sharing. Right, you reduced it.
Yes. That would be their incentive was that. But they didn't have, in the Tosin era, they didn't have to keep 50% exposed in the company.
Right. But it...
That's a big change.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big change.
Yeah.
And you said it was $690 million that got wiped out.
That's my understanding. That wasn't him, that's been told.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody else have further questions? Mr. Greenberg, thank you very much for your time. I just want to be courteous to my colleagues and make sure that they don't have any questions. Thanks very much for your time and for coming to meet with us. I hope that if we think of other things or during the course of our investigation, we actually come up with other things that we wish we would have had a chance to ask you about that we could follow up with you.
Sure.
And we'll call Lee. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.